16 million colors. Wreak some havoc in your head. Welcome to Titan Cast, your home for Sega Saturn news, commentary, personal stories, and more. My name's Samuel, the Southern Sega Gentleman. With me today, hailing out of Manchester as usual, we have our Lord and Savior, Father K. And hailing from the West Coast, we have our West Coast correspondent, the Virtuous Club, Brian. Alright, ladies and gents, today we figured we'd get a little bit off the cuff and just talk about whatever we wanted to. But before we get to that, we're going to go ahead and get a little news out of the way, and seeing how our Lord and Savior Father K's done had a little adventure over the past week, we wanted to hear about it. So, Simon, give it to us.
Okay, so I took a road trip north of the border up to Edinburgh in Scotland this week and set myself a little challenge, which I put out there on the Facebook page, that I needed to grab myself something Saturn related while I was in Edinburgh. I took my two sons up there for a kind of 3-day holiday. So in quest of my time there, but I decided I was going to go and visit a couple of stores and try and get me something Saturn. And it didn't quite turn out as successful as I had hoped. I visited a couple of stores. One was the famous CEX or Sex, which people talked about on the Junkyard Facebook page, not necessarily in too many positive terms. I also visited a retro gaming and record store called Backtracks, which was truly horrendous. And I can tell the whole story now if you want, or I can save that for later. So I don't know what you want me to do, but it was a pretty horrific experience. So it did end well. It did end with something Saturn related, and I'm not going to be giving anyone any kind of spoiler there, because by the time this podcast comes out, I'll have talked about it on the Facebook page, and I actually even might quest down the tale of the quest on the Saturn Junkyard main page, because I've written quite a few paragraphs about this quest. I've had an interesting time up in Scotland. I did come home with something Saturn related, not quite what I'd expected. Yeah, that's me.
Good to go, good to go. Well, tell us about your little time over the past week, Brian.
Well, actually it was my mom's 60th birthday this weekend, so I was out of town for most of it. We went to a Japanese steakhouse. That was kind of fun. Saturn-related stuff. Actually, on behalf of the channel and on behalf of Nuno, who is unable to join us today, I could talk about the video he dropped on Friday, or I guess last Friday, because you'll probably be listening to this next week, which is all about Panzer Dragoon, the original game, where there he did a visual comparison across all of the ports of the original Saturn, the Xbox version that was included as an unlockable in Orta. There's the PC version, emulated version, PS2 version. So he kind of goes through and puts them side by side, which is pretty cool. And you guys should definitely check out that video if you haven't already. And speaking of Panzer Dragoon, they've also announced that that will be playable. And probably by the time you listen to this, that should be Panzer Dragoon Orta should be backwards compatible on Xbox One for anybody who has that. So I'll probably be playing that this week. Just in general, I'm really excited about the announcements of Shenmue 1 and 2 HD. I've been playing a lot of PSVR. I don't know. I'm all over the place.
If I can just add a little news on the Panzer Dragoon Orta front, they have actually released a patch which solves aim that causes the game to crash. I've only played the first 3 levels of the game, because after level 3, the game usually crashes, or it has done in PAL regions anyway.
That was specifically a issue that was for the PAL regions. Prime example is a lot of people over here up in the U.S. If you have an older Xbox, it's not an issue playing Panzer Dragoon on the original Xbox. Newer Xboxes, though, they have an issue. I think it was after 1.6, I believe it was. I might be wrong on that. But regardless, after a certain point, a lot of these systems have a hard time reading Panzer Dragoon, especially now with their age, basically. for a lot of us here in the States, the only way to play Panzer Dragoon was through the Xbox 360. Of course, there was a lot of issues with the emulation, especially in the later stages, but it wasn't so much of a game-breaking issue, prime example being over there in Power Regions where the game would completely crash.
Yeah, I played mine on the 360, not on the Xbox. Nothing to do with it, but it was a game-breaker, and they have released a patch now to ensure that doesn't happen in Power Regions anymore.
That's cool. Yeah, I've had a similar issue. Well, just not with the game breaking bugs, but or the freezing that you and there were several other members who had had that exact issue. But no, with like my Xbox that I use now is a newer model, so the original version or a copy of Panzer Dragoon Orta, for whatever reason, yeah, it won't read it. It'll think it's dirty or damaged, even though it's pristine. And it worked perfectly on my old Xbox. But then I bought another copy of Panzer Dragoon Orta, and it seems to work just fine. So I don't know if it was there, if there was an issue with the discs as well that were part of that. But it's kind of interesting.
Well, the main thing about it is that the newer consoles, the lasers in them just aren't as well built as the older consoles. So it's not so much an issue with the disc, even though it does have a part to do with that. Really what it's about is that the newer revisions of the Xbox just have a really hard time reading some disc. Prime example, it also happened with the PS2. You had the slim model PS2s had really hard times reading some of the CD-based games, the Bluebacks, and they also had a hard time playing some of the DVD-based games after time. One prime example I know, not just from myself but from other people, was the original Killzone. If you didn't have a fat model PS2, a lot of times the slim models would not play that disc at all.
Oh, wow. Yeah, well, that's a bummer for anybody who wanted to play, Fantavision, the blue discs.
Why don't you tell us what you've been getting up to on the last few days?
Well, if anybody's a fan of the YouTube channel, you probably already know about the channel update that I dropped back on Tuesday of last week at this point. So there's going to be some changes with the Junkyard. The major, the biggest one of them is that I will no longer be making pre-produced video content for the Junkyard's YouTube channel. I still plan on doing Titancast, obviously, and I still plan on doing live streams, even though the frequency of those is going to be much, much more restricted compared to previous times. The reason being is all of my pre-produced video content going forward is going onto my channel. I don't have 100 subscribers yet, so you can't just type in youtube.com/the Southern Sega Gentleman. It's getting there. I've already picked up about 32, 33, 30-something people in the first day or two, and I am very appreciative for everybody who's come over. But if you want to see my content, you're going to have to come over there. Now, what's going to basically be happening with me is, I love the Sega Saturn. It's my favorite console. Really, it's tied for first with the Dreamcast. But there's a lot of other stuff I want to talk about. I had 30-something PS1 games before I even owned a PlayStation. I just played them over at my friend's house. I grew up with the Master System, the Sega Genesis, all these different consoles. I love current-gen stuff. I'm not one of the retro gamers who hates new games. So there's a lot of stuff I want to talk about. And for me to be able to do that and stay within the purview of the Saturn Junkyard didn't really jive too well. I mean, it's the Saturn Junkyard after all. So for that reason, I made my own channel. Primarily, I'll be focusing on 5th gen, 6th gen stuff for the most part. Maybe a little bit of, newer stuff like PS3, PS4. But most of the time, it's going to be older stuff, back in the mid-90s mostly. If you want to check out some of that stuff, come on over. I got my first video dropping the 28th of April. That's going to be a Saturday. Other than that, I mean, there's been a lot of pre-production work going into the videos. I'm trying to get as many of them done as I can before the actual videos drop. That way I can stay ahead of things. Do got a full-time job, family, everything else. So I don't want to get myself overburdened. And besides that, I've been playing the hell out of some games, obviously. I mean, you can't really make videos without doing game capture. And there is a crap ton of videos that need to have game capture in them. Just to give you an idea, I've been playing a lot up on my PlayStation lately. Even though I've got a couple of Saturn videos that are going to be coming out, but most of those games really didn't take me a whole long. We were talking about this before the cast. You know, a lot of the Saturn games, the reason that they're really enjoyable for a number of people, it seems like, is that you can just kind of pick up and play them. There's a lot of shmups, fighters, stuff like that. But even the more, you know, arcadey, not arcadey, but the action style games, I mean, you can normally run through them in a couple of hours. So, I mean, it's not so much of a heavy burden on you whenever it comes to playing wise. You know, it's a pick up and play kind of thing. Whereas a lot of PlayStation games and games from that point on, including some Dreamcast games, they weren't so arcadey. They weren't pick up and play. They were, you had to really invest yourself into them. You had to spend more time with them. What that also means, especially now for, you know, pre-production for my channel, is there's a lot of time I have to invest in these games to actually get deep enough into them to actually show you off some of the stuff I want to show. So that really means, it kind of helps out that I have insomnia, but it kind of works out in the end because, you know, getting up at 2 o'clock in the morning playing a PlayStation game for like 3 hours before I go to work, it ain't too bad. Kind of reminds me of back whenever I was a kid.
Yeah, I actually have gotten a routine where I kind of do that. I play for an hour or so every morning. I might make a video in a little bit, but I would like to play a lot of, kind of as you were saying, just easy to get into, like shmups, anything with like forward momentum I'm kind of drawn to. So shmups, racing games. I've been doing that a lot as well, although not necessarily for GameCap, just for shits and giggles. How about you, Simon?
I've been playing quite a lot of games that I hadn't explored on the Saturn. Playing is Dungeons and Dragons, which is a kind of RPG based side scrolling beat 'em up in the style of what's the Sega classic side scrolling beat 'em up.
Golden Axe.
Anyway, you travel along and you have to beat off various monsters and ogres and elves and so on. It's quite long and it's quite repetitive and it's cool. It's good. It's okay, but it's not massively inspiring. The other thing I have done, which I'm quite pleased about, is I've got back into Police Nauts in a big way. Stagnating games. I've stagnated recently in Pandemonium and I've stagnated recently in Police Nauts. So I forced myself to get back into it. And because it's a game that you need to just keep playing, it's quite a long-winded exploratory game. But the rewards of plowing through it are immense. The storyline is just mind-blowing. And I won't give out any spoilers here, but something major happened on disc 3 last night that was quite mind-blowing. So, yeah, back into Police Nauts in a big way, checking out a few Dungeons & Dragons and stagnating heavily in Honcho's Log Mill in Pandemonium.
It seems like some of those games you would almost talk about in a similar vein as you would like your, you know, the whatever show you're watching on Netflix. Right. So those kind of visual novel games or games that are very heavily story oriented. Police Nauts or D or Enemy Zero or any of those. I mean, it seems like there's a lot of, I don't know, that's like kind of a fun way to take them in, is like you almost think of it as episodic as you're just playing it bit by bit. And
with Police Nauts, you can sort of pause at any time and you can get a story recap. So if you've left it for a couple of weeks, it'll give you a story recap if you choose to have one, which will kind of bring you up to speed and remind you of what you've done. But it's a long-winded game. It goes over 3 discs. You have to put a lot of work in because several of the episodes can't be triggered unless you've explored every clue that needs to be explored in that particular scene and so on. It's good, but I have a really, really low attention span and I have a really, really bad habit of, as soon as things get a little bit too difficult, I will jump off one game and go and play a shmup, or I'll go and play a football game or a driving game, which requires attention or little skill in terms of longevity. Of, do you know what I mean? I'm not very good at sticking at things often, so yeah, it's good. The rewards come when you stick at something, right? And so I guess I've just found that with Police Nauts.
Well, my question is, and, you know, it's not just a question for you. I mean, it's a question for the audience as well. You know, back in the 90s, we had, you know, at least for me, if I had a game, that was normally the only game I had, okay? That doesn't mean I didn't have other games, but I'd already beaten those games. But whenever you picked up a brand new game for $45, $50, sometimes even more than that, it seemed like you had a real investment into it. And we talked about this kind of with the backups. You know, nowadays we can just burn a backup or whatever the case might be, and you're not really invested in the game. So, you know, really my question to you, Simon, is have you always been this way, or is it really just something new, especially, you know, with the advent of, you know, you have a lot more money to spend? I mean, granted, you were an adult back whenever the Saturn first came out. I mean, you know, full-fledged, had kids and everything else. But do you think now it's more prominent that you just, once you get tired of a game or you get frustrated with it, you just move to the next one? Or is it something a little different?
I think when I have completed games, it's been games that have, first of all, been accessible and easy to complete, or straightforward. Maybe straightforward is a better term than easy. So I've played some long games. I mean, you know, Shenmue to its conclusion. I played successfully through lots of games, but I didn't start doing that till way after my first Saturn period. I never completed anything on the Saturn first time round. I then kind of got a PS2 and a Dreamcast, and that was when I started completing games, things like God of War, GTA. And so, yeah, and the 360 and PS3 generation, I finished all of those games, and long games, things like Fallout 3 and, you know, so it's not that I leave everything undone, but with my Saturn library and with my Dreamcast library, I've just always had such a huge choice being able to jump from game to game. It's almost like a curse in a way to have so many games, because it just allows me to jump off struts so easily when I'm facing something hard, which means that I end up having lots and lots of games unfinished, which is a hugely unsatisfactory place to be at.
Well, I was kind of thinking about that the other day. You know, I was talking to one of my buddies who's about 10 years older than me. And, you know, he grew up primarily in the 80s. And the game style back then was more arcadey. And it lived up until the mid-90s. You know, I mean, a lot of Genesis games, Mega Drive, and a lot of Saturn games were very arcadey, not just in the fact that they might have been an arcade port, but also because of the fact that they didn't require a lot of investment. I mean, that is in you could play it at your leisure so much. It wasn't that you had to dedicate time into it. And I really think that, you know, there's a generational gap kind of there to where, you know, people like me who grew up with narrative-driven, story-driven games for the most part. I mean, granted, you know, I did grow up with the Mega Drive, the Genesis and everything, and had those quick games that you could just throw in for 15, 20 minutes. But really, whenever I came into adulthood, you had to invest 10, 12, 15 hours into a game to actually get something out of it. So, to be honest with you, the arcadey games, I'm just now really coming back to them, because really it boils down to I have a family, I have full-time work, I have all this time restraint on me that I can't really appreciate those. It's not out of frustration, I just can't appreciate those heavily invested games because I can only sit down and play them for an hour or two. That's, you know, that's what I was talking about earlier with the insomnia. I mean, it's great that I wake up at 2-3 o'clock in the morning and stay up for 3-4 hours sometimes because I can actually invest some time into those games. But generally speaking, I might get an hour or two of gameplay a day, and that's lucky if I get my daughter down in time to go to sleep. So my entire attitude on a lot of games has changed, and it's really brought me back to a lot of the arcade style games. In fact, a lot of arcade ports. I mean, I've been playing the hell out of some Model 2 games lately. And, you know, it's taken me back to my childhood, you know, dropping quarters into the machine, just trying to make it to the next round, you know, trying to make it past the next boss, whatever the case is. So, you know, I mean, that's something that I think really needs to be talked about sometimes in the community, is how our mindset with games has changed, especially with our change in age, from going from child to adult to family, whatever the case it might be. And that's kind of what I was wanting to figure out with you, especially with how you were always putting down games. I mean, we've talked about it numerous times, and you know, I'm really glad now that you're actually sticking through with it and you know, trying to get to the end of that game, because Police Knots is absolutely that is an absolutely amazing game. I think it's much better than Snatcher personally.
Well, That's also just kind of speaks to the value that the Saturn has, or just kind of its place or its legacy within the progression of video games as a whole. Like, for me, it's an awesome console to always have hooked up because, exactly as you guys are saying, you can kind of count on it to have a breadth of fighting games and shoot shmups and racing games to just hop in, play. Are very arcade style, you know, maybe they're easy to pick up, but you can also invest that time to master the mechanics and the nuances of them. And they're very rewarding in that way, but you can still enjoy them fully without needing to budget, you know, 20 hours of your time to dedicate to a single game. And so it's great to always have that as kind of a fallback in between whatever else you may be playing that is more of the long form and story based. And when we're talking about that generational divide, you could clearly see that. I mean, that to me is the main difference of between the PlayStation and the Saturn, is that Sega very much clung to that mentality that the arcade experience was going to be popular forever. That's what people would continue to want. And when Sony kind of pushed, especially with Square's involvement for Final Fantasy VII and all those RPGs that came out, and, you know, I think the Saturn just kind of, or Sega kind of underestimated how much, especially in the West, people would gravitate to those long investments they were starting to favor in their game purchasing habits. They really just wanted a game they could get a ton of value out of and play for 60 hours and you know, have a ton to see. And so that's kind of the guidepost that most of the industry kind of gravitated towards for a while after, especially once we got into open world games, which is a whole other thing.
I mean, prime example being, you know, my very first title for the Saturn. I mean, I didn't go buy a Virtual Fighter. I didn't go buy a Virtual Fighter Remix. I didn't get not Time Crisis, but Virtual Cop, any of that. What I went and got was Resident Evil. I went and got a game that was actually story-driven, you know, and granted, Resident Evil, you can easily beat it, you know, in an hour and a half if you know what you're doing. And granted, I can speed run the game in like an hour and 10 minutes nowadays. But back then, man, I mean, I've talked about it, I think it was for the New Year's cast. I literally went home and spent all night trying to get past the snake up in the attic, man. It's just like the whole mindset difference. It just kind of blows me away. 'Cause like I was talking about, The people who were older than me, my cousins and everything, they wanted the arcade games. I loved the arcade games. But whenever I was at my house playing a game, I wanted a story. I wanted to be invested in something. And I think that does in a lot of ways. And I think the Shiros had talked about it a week or two back, you know, with the RPGs and everything like that. Or maybe it was on one of their live streams. But Sega of America really dropped the ball whenever they didn't bring those time invested games over to America, and Sega Europe for the very same reason. They didn't bring that stuff over, and it really did a disservice to the Saturn as a whole, because you had this shift that was happening in gaming. And I mean, think about it this way. I mean, how many games do you remember even being released in 1998? We had a poll that dropped up. How many people bought their Saturns when they dropped them? And I was surprised by how many people were like me, didn't pick up a Saturn until 1997. And it really sucked to pick up a Saturn and just see it discontinued within a year. I mean, that, and I was completely oblivious to the idea that it was even going to be gone. So within a year of me getting my Saturn, there might have been 15 games released for the Saturn in North America. I mean, I can remember there was a huge period of time where there was no new games. Like, there was nothing new on the shelf. Like, I was going to the store on a regular basis trying to, you know, see what new games were coming out. And there was nothing new. There was no empty spots where new games had been sold out. I mean, granted, Saturn hardly ever sold out. Not in my area, at least. But, I mean, it wasn't there. So, they dropped the ball, man. They dropped the ball. There was a shift in gameplay. There was a shift in game style. And what the audience really wanted. And people like me and Brian are closer in age by a long shot than me and Simon, but I mean, it was a different mindset, and we were looking for something different, and Sega, at least here in the West, really screwed up on that.
You're absolutely right. When I was initially purchasing a Saturn, as I've also said before, I was all about sports games. I wanted a driving game, a fighting game, a golf game, and a soccer game. And when I had those games, that was me done. I wasn't looking for any kind of story-based games because I was, as I've said before as well, I was a young father at the time. I was just starting out in a new job, and I only could have short snatches of gameplay. But the other thing is, what you were saying in terms of the games that were perhaps more arcade-based and shorter, a lot of the games on the Mega Drive, a lot of the early games had passwords and they had auto-saves. And so, you know, you could play small snatches of those games. You could come back in at exactly the same point you left off, even if you'd left that game for a few weeks or days. You know, I think short bursts of gaming were what I was about at the time, perhaps when I was 15, 16, and would have really appreciated a long RPG or a story-based quest. And I was purchasing a Saturn, and I didn't get the desire to complete a long game back till Shenmue on the Dreamcast in about 2006, I guess, would be the first time I really wanted to complete a game, really wanted to make sure I finished that game and squeezed out every nuance of its story and every aspect of its game. And we'll be doing again very soon in HD on the PlayStation 4, both hell, 1 and 2.
Hell yeah, for sure. Oh, also, I don't know if you guys caught this, but it's only $30 too.
You know,
for both of them.
That's a perfect segue. Let's just jump into the news real quick. Here's the news for you real fast. And this is not our news. This is the news. You know, I always say, you know, this is this is Titancast. You know, blah 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 blah. Yeah, here we go. Here's some news cycle for you. First thing up on the chopping block, since we are a Sega Saturn podcast, and Shenmue, while it did start on, it's not specifically Saturn. We can't do that. That Sega, that's what needs to happen. Hashtag save Virtua Fighter RPG. Get it going. Drop it in the shit. Come on.
Project Berkeley. Come on.
Project Berkeley. Let's go. Hashtag save. Whatever. Words. Words escape me. It doesn't matter. Here we go, though. Right out the news gate, anybody who's a fan of our channel, possibly is a fan of Sega Lord X, Sega Lord X channel is back live. Granted, it was live already. He had videos popped up, but now it is officially live. Two new video drops just in the past 24 hours. Go over there, check them out, give them some love. Also, we have the Shiro guys. Shiro guys are dropping some awesome Let's Plays. Well, not necessarily Let's Plays, but live streams. Their buddy Chaz over there, and they also have an anime stream that they're doing every Saturday if you aren't aware of it. So if you want a little bit of Sega Saturn love, go over there, check them out. I drop in sometimes. Sega Lord X drops in sometimes. They've got some awesome people over there. And give them some love. Let's see what else. We also have, of course, the biggest news of the hour Sega-wise. Save Shenmue has happened. Well, not only Save Shenmue, but you know, Save Shenmue HD, whatever you want to call it. We also have gotten that done. And like Brian alluded to, $30 price tag. That's $30 USD. It'll be, you know, comparable depending on what region you go into. So there you go right there. We finally got that game in HD. Now, I know there's a lot of people in the community who have never played Shenmue. There's a lot of divisive opinions on it. And, you know, truth be told, it's not a game for everybody. A lot of people don't enjoy it. A lot of people absolutely love it. I mean, there's a couple of people in the middle. I haven't really seen a lot of people in the middle. But if you haven't ever got a chance to play it, pick it up, give it a go. If nothing else, by paying that $30 or whatever the case it might be, dollars, depending on your region, what you're doing is you're telling Sega and other people like them that you are willing to purchase games that are 20-something years old, that have been remastered, whatever the case is, and that gives more credit to the idea that we can actually get these games back into the market. If we don't pay to have these games, and we do like a lot of us did with the Dreamcast and just bootleg the hell out of crap or wait for it to pop up on an emulator or whatever the case is, we're not going to continue to get these titles. These companies got to make money some way, and if they're willing to bring back a 20-year-old IP, you best believe I'm going to give them $30. I'm pretty sure both gentlemen other than me are going to do the exact same, so do your part, to quote Starship Troopers.
Yeah, I'm buying both the Xbox One and the PS4 versions, so just
for the digital version and the physical version. I just wanted to say as well, we are a Saturn podcast, and I just wanted to say there are so many references to Virtua Fighter and to the Saturn in Shenmue that I think it's legitimate that we talk about it here, because, you know, you've got Virtua Fighter kids' toys in the capsule machines, you've got Virtua Fighter posters in Ryo's house, you've got
Sega Saturn in Ryo's house.
That's not Ryu's house, y'all. We went over this last week, okay? It's Nuno is a time traveler. He's gone back. He's Sanshiro. Okay, Sanshiro grew up. We went over this, y'all. Come on.
Yeah.
Okay, I got you. But you know, so many Saturn references there and so much Saturn love in that game that it almost, and it started off on the Saturn. We're allowed to talk about it here. I am so excited about this. I can't tell you how excited I am. But I think it also means that we've got to realize that Shenmue 3 now is definitely not going to appear in 2018.
Yeah, I think that's pretty much a given at this point. I know they keep talking about, you know, it's going to drop in 2018, and that's been the word. But I mean, if they're dropping this year, if we see Shenmue 3, it's going to be a late release. It's going to be like Christmas at least. There's no way around that, I don't think. And be honest with you, we talked about it already. I talked about it on one of the live streams. I'm honestly just a little bit worried about Shenmue 3. I hate to be this way, but the community has hyped this game up so much that it's not that I don't think I'll enjoy it. I just hate to see if the game actually drops and then we have all this negative feedback from a community that has hyped itself up to the point of insanity, especially people that have been waiting for the game for 20-something years, who remember back whenever, you know, there was that whole Shenmue Online thing where you were going to be, that was like 2006, 2007. That was the last time Shenmue was talked about for a long time.
Yeah.
I agree. I think that the hype could be there, but you know what? I'm going to enjoy it because I wanted it to happen so much. I was one of those people that used to go on Shenmue Dojo every day looking for a snippet of news, for a glimmer of hope. Seeing Ryu turn up in the Sega All-Stars racing games was one of the most exciting things that happened to me around 2011, 12, whenever that game came out. I cannot express how happy I was. In fact, Shenmue 3 was in a very sort of, by way of a very circuitous route or whatever you call it, led me back to retro gaming. The announcement of Shenmue 3 led me back to retro gaming, led me back to the Saturn Junkyard. So I've hyped myself into a position of almost pant-wetting excitement, but you know, I'm going to enjoy it. What, if they'd brought out a skin on the top of the Yakuza games, I would have enjoyed it. Anything at all to do with Shenmue, I'm going to enjoy anything.
I'm the exact same way. I don't know. I'm just a pessimist in this regard. I just don't want to see the community just go off the rails. Because I remember, I mean, what was it? A couple of months back, or maybe even half a year or so.
Whenever talk about the trailer.
Yeah, whenever the people were talking about the trailer, these people are losing their minds over the simplest crap. Whenever you're talking about a 20-year-old game, okay? Granted, it's now running on, you know, a whole different engine, et cetera, et cetera. But I mean, come on, people. It is a Kickstarter game at this point. It has not got the backing of a AAA title like Battlefield or Call of Duty or any of these other games. I mean, we're not talking about that kind of money investment. I mean, Sony really didn't. I mean, I know whenever it dropped, I was watching E3 whenever it happened live, and everybody was talking about it, and there is no way of expressing how awesomely excited I was, and everybody in the community, I think, was. But then to really digest it and understand in the coming weeks that Sony wasn't going to be, you know, putting money into the development of the game. It was more, I think at the time they were just talking about, well, we're going to do marketing for it. So for people to sit here and just lose their minds over the simple stuff, man, let the game come out, dude. Let the people do what they're doing. Let Suzuki figure out exactly how he wants to design this game. Let him figure out how he wants to tell this narrative, and just roll with it and appreciate it, man. I mean, the community has got so toxic, and it's not just the retro gaming community, it's the gaming community as a whole. We look at these projects before they're done and start crucifying stuff before we ever have a chance to even look at the actual finished gameplay. And then you throw it on top. And you know what? It's a product of the times, because you have so many AAA titles that come out that are broken upon release. I'm talking about broken upon release. And you have to wait 2-3 weeks to get an update to fix some of the most mundane crap. So I can understand why the community is so... It just attacks games before they ever even come out. And then on top of that, like I said, we have the hype train. The hype train is real nowadays, especially with Facebook. All the retro gaming communities are involved with it. YouTube, there's 50,000 different retro gamers, including myself, whatever the case is. So I think we just need to take a step back. Everybody needs to go back into the shoes of walking into the, you know, the store, walking into the rental store, whatever the case is, looking at the back of the jewel case, looking at what the, you know, just reading those 2-3 paragraphs and a couple of screenshots, and just take a chance. Everybody just needs to take a chance, and what happens, happens. If everybody loves it, great. If everybody hates it, well, we know we ain't getting a Shenmue 4. There you go.
Well, yeah, there's a lot of aspects of this, and I think the perspective is very important as we think about a game that is following. I mean, so this, yeah, it's an independent Kickstarter effort, right? It's for all intents and purposes, this is an indie developed title from Yu Suzuki and his team, but they're following the heels of what was at the time by far the most expensive video game ever produced. A game that had, you know, I think what did the original Shenmue 1 and 2 cost? I think they cost like $60 million. They were in the Guinness Book of World Records for being the most expensive games ever, and had no small part in Sega's hasty exit from the console race, because they were already strapped for cash, and, you know, with investments like this that they just didn't make money on, or at least make their money back on, you know, that's gonna, the disparity between the scopes of those projects, I think, needs to be taken into account. We need to kind of reset our expectations entirely. The problem is that this is a game, for Shenmue 3 is a game that people have been clamoring for almost 20 years now. And so I just don't think it's, you know, I don't see any scenario where there won't be significant backlash if it's not everything people expected it to be, just because people are anticipating something that just isn't feasible. And I don't really see a way to bridge that disconnect, unfortunately.
I would put it like this. If you imagine a band that did a classic album, and then 20 years later, they came back into the studio and they tried to recapture that magic, the chances of them of doing something as good as the first album would be very small, but their fans would really appreciate the effort, right? Their fans would be cheering them. They would be really hoping it would be the best. And they would, that's the way I feel about it. Unless it's absolutely terrible and broken, I cannot see myself not liking it. And I think that they're going to be really careful, because they have a legacy that they have to take care of here. And it's Yu Suzuki at the helm. He's not going to put a product out that isn't top notch. I really believe that. I think that it might not make big in terms of sales, but critically, there's going to be people who panic, because unfortunately, gamers, there are some real arseholes in the gaming world, and people who come online and crib and moan about every single aspect of everything. So it's bound to get people who go, this is terrible, this is awful, just like we did when the trailer came out. However, I just think it's going to be, I think it's going to be superb. I honestly do. I cannot, you can see, I'm absolutely in a tizzy about the whole thing, and I'm going to be playing Shenmue 1 and 2 through before Shenmue 3, probably 3 or 4 times in anticipation of Shenmue 3.
Well, I'm absolutely enthralled with it, because I want to be able to actually sit down and record, you know, Shenmue 1 and 2 in HD, and I want to be able to play those games in HD. And I don't mean just HD, I mean, you know, proper, you know, widescreen aspect ratio. I mean, I'm one of them enthusiasts who plays games in their proper aspect ratio, okay? And I know that there's hacks and all these other kind of things. Nuno did a great video on widescreen hacks. But, you know, there's a lot of issues with that kind of stuff. And granted, you got emulators now that can run Shenmue 1 in like 4K, and it absolutely looks astonishing. Granted, I don't necessarily know if the textures and everything, it doesn't matter. Go over to Shenmue Dojo. There are some people over there who make Emule DC and Null DC look absolutely amazing. It looks like photographic crap. I mean, it blows the filters on the Xbox away. But I really just want to be able to pick this game back up and go back to where I was years ago and be able to relive this whole thing in HD, in widescreen, and be able to actually show it off to my daughter once she gets old enough. Because, I mean, at this rate, she's going to be a damn gamer anyway. Because, I mean, hell, she'll sit there with a controller in her hand, not even plugged in, pushing buttons while daddy's playing the Saturn. So, For me, it's awesome to be able to kind of go back through this because I'm really getting to relive that adolescence of my life that, you know, had so much going on with it, though, and games were the escape from all this hell that was around me. So for me, it's absolutely amazing, and I agree with you. I'm going to love the game regardless. I don't care if it's broken or not. I'm going to love it because it's Shenmue 3. You know, it's something I've been waiting on forever. The story's going to get to go. You know, I'm not stuck in that freaking cave in China anymore. I'm going to be able to do something else. But I'm just a little tentative whenever it comes to the idea of what the community is capable of doing, because I don't want to see the community absolutely destroy this game. And I really feel like there is legitimate fear in that, especially if you look at other games that have been brought back, like prime example. I mean, granted, a lot of people say Mighty No. 9 absolutely sucks. I enjoyed the game, but I mean, that game got destroyed whenever it was a Kickstarter game that was brought up, and it was supposed to be the long-awaited, you know, bring back 2D-style Mega Man, whatever you want to call it, and the community just absolutely destroyed that game.
Well, the other
aspect... They do every time for Sonic, though, as well. Every time there's a new Sonic game, it's destroyed by the community. It's like people want it to fail.
And I'll be honest with you, man, I don't think so. I personally do not feel like Sonic is a 3D game. I do not feel like Sonic is a 3D game whatsoever. It is a 2D side-scrolling, you know, it's a platformer. Granted, it's a platformer on speed. It makes Mario look like he's an old man running around up in stilts, or not stilts, but on crutches. But my point is I feel like Sonic needs to be a 2D game. So I think there's a lot of people who probably have that same mindset, and whenever they see a 3D game, and it's like, man, maybe they're going to make Sonic work this time. And I guess their only thought process is to go back to, you know, Sonic Adventure 1 or 2 on the Dreamcast, and it's not Sonic Adventure 1 or 2. Well, I got news for you. It's not going to be Sonic Adventure 1 or 2. That was 20-something years ago. It's not going to happen again.
Sonic 4, that was produced about 10 years ago, was a side-scrolling, original Sonic-style Mega Drive game. And it was slated as being terrible. It's really good. But as I say, there was almost an expectation that people want it to fail. And I'm sure there's going to be naysayers that will want Shenmue to fail in the same way. I mean, there are people, in fact, Sega, kicking. That's why Sumo Digital was so good, because they took Sega titles and they brought them back in a... Or they took Sega characters and brought them back in a really respectful and really excellent way. Sumo Digital handled Sega IPs in a fabulous way. So yeah. We need someone of their caliber to make sure that they protect his backstocker and that when things are brought back, they're brought back carefully and delivered well.
Yeah, how well can Christian Whitehead program in 3D, I think, is the question.
Sure.
But actually, I mean, kind of going back to that, I will also agree to disagree on the Episode 4 or Sonic 4. I felt those games were terrible, mainly because for the same reason I thought the newer Robo or whatever the new... the newer Tony Hawk games have been terrible, and that is that they lost all sense of physics of what made a Sonic game feel like a Sonic game, and how they handled momentum and literally everything about the level design. I don't know. I feel like those games, episodes 1 and 2 of Sonic 4, were both fundamentally flawed for a variety of reasons. But just kind of going more broadly, or back to Shenmue a little bit, you know, that's such a unique game. Where we were talking earlier about that dichotomy between the generation where games were easy to get into and you could just hop in and play and just do whatever, and you know, you didn't have to commit a lot of time to them, as well as the story driven games that tend to push you forward and had, you know, all of these things to do and keep you occupied for, you know, 60-100 hours. Shenmue was very unique in that I never felt it ever fit cleanly into any sort of generational trend, because it was a game that really, really embraced the mundane aspects of the world that you were inhabiting. And so, you know, there just weren't a lot of games that leveraged the players. You know, the player, you know, had to entertain themselves in many ways, whether it was going to the arcade, whether it was feeding a cat, knocking on doors, buying chocolate at the little convenience store, the tomato mart. you know, there were just so many things that you did and so many ways to interact with the world that you just didn't see in other games. Even when games got really big into open worlds and very detailed, and you saw the GTA and Elder Scrolls really explode into what they are today and Fallout, you still didn't have that minutia of being able to, you know, talk to people who were at different points of the game who were all going through their own personal shit at the time, and they all had their daily schedules, and you were able to go through. I guess what I'm saying is that it'll be really interesting to see how gamers these days react to a lot of the conventions and a lot of the mechanics that Shenmue had embraced that were on that slow, plodding, mundane side. Because that is a huge part of why I still love that game so much, is because there just weren't a lot of games that were doing it at the time. So it'll be kind of interesting to see how that fits in to gamers' tastes these days.
Well, it was a life simulator. I mean, it's not an RPG. It's not, you know, I consider it an adventure game to a degree, because, I mean, you are on this adventure. But it's a life simulator. You literally are the one who decides, you know, the pace of action. I can't tell you, I know I'm not the only person who does this, but, you know, for me personally, on both Shenmue 1 and Shenmue 2, I had saves that were in a particular spot to where I could just run down to the arcade and literally play games in the arcade. That was the only reason I even had that one particular save. So, I mean, that was a whole... You got what you got from it. And we've got a little chat in the background, and we've been talking about some things, you know, in the background while we've been each talking. But, you know, what Simon's talking about, is that, granted, let me take a step back and say this. Emulating the Saturn is not really crazy difficult. A lot of people make it out to be, but it's not that crazy difficult. But I do think they pretty much have to rebuild the games. But a good idea is this. How many of y'all saw the Saturn and wanted to play the Saturn games? Wanted to actually, you know, play an actual Saturn game, not just an arcade game, but a Saturn game on the Saturn in Shenmue 1. If there was a Saturn sitting off in some building in Shenmue 3 and we could play it, that would absolutely blow me away. I'm right there with you, Simon.
My dream. Imagine being able to play Virtua Fighter or Virtua Cop or something like that in the arcade. It would just be mind-blowing.
You know, well, To that point, Yakuza, I can't remember whether it was one of the more recent ones, but they had Virtua Fighter 2, I think, in the arcades. And number 6, it has, get this, from what my understanding, Yakuza 6, which is out this week, is going to have a fully playable version of Virtua Fighter 5 in its arcade. That's insane to me.
No way.
I mean, that's absolutely awesome, but I meant to bring this up earlier. I want a HD remake of Gun Griffin 1 and 2. That's all I want. Put it in Shenmue 3. I know that Yu Suzuki has absolutely nothing to do with game arts, and it's not Sega, blah, blah, blah. Put it in there. Hashtag save Gun Griffin HD.
I'm putting your petition to Yu Suzuki right now, Sam. It might get in there before Shenmue 3 comes out.
It is the best... And this is really what brought, you know, this, you know, I know we talked about Shenmue for the vast majority of this podcast. I mean, really, not really, but I mean, there are so many games that came out back then that are loved by so many people that could benefit so greatly from having an HD remake. I mean, granted, we're not talking about, you know, 2D games to a point don't really need the HD remake so much, but the early 3D games could really benefit from having an HD remake, not a remaster, a remake. There is a vast difference. We're not just talking about, you know, making the pixel count a little bit better and, you know, blending stuff up. No. I want full HD remakes for these games. I mean, and like I said, Gun Griffin. I mean, there are a lot of people who absolutely love Gun Griffin 1 and 2 and would love to see those games again, especially in full HD. I mean... And I'm kind of going on a love fest with that game because I absolutely love it. But I mean, there's lots of other games that could benefit from it. I mean, prime example, we're not going to get an HD remaster of Panzer Dragoon Saga. So why not just remake the game? Remake the game, Panzer Dragoon Saga. If we can do Shenmue then it's not too hard to think that there's the possibility that we could actually get Panzer Dragoon Saga. I mean, look at the hype that's been created over, you know, the whole aspect of Shenmue being created and, you know, being remastered in HD. And then, you know, think about all the insanity that has blown up about people being able to play Panzer Dragoon Orta on Xbox One. And, you know, presumably a lot of those people probably want to play it just so that they can get to the Panzer Dragoon extra, basically, in Pandora's box. But, I mean, the point remains is that the retro community, we think about the retro community. We're adults now. We have money we can spend. We grew up with these games. Some of us were already in our 20s whenever these games came out. And then there's those of us like me and Brian who were, you know, just turned into teenagers. We are full-grown adults now. We have disposable income. We can back these projects. We have sway. The internet does have sway. And if you get enough people together that are pushing for this stuff, it can happen.
For sure. For sure. You know, that also kind of speaks more broadly. I think some of the folks on, I can't remember whether it was Mike or Tom, somebody from the Dreamcast Junkyard, they had made the point that, you know, at some point when they do enough, and this is kind of just, you know, blanketing everything, remaster, remakes, when they make these games available, old Dreamcast games in that instance, available to modern audiences on modern hardware, at some point, they would have to wonder, where is that cutoff between what the Dreamcast did and can only do that you would only be able to play if you owned a Dreamcast versus just being able to play those games on any other console. And honestly, I feel like it's a good thing. The more we see, remakes, but remasters as well, the more that we see these games transcend the original hardware they were a part of, you know, I think that really helps in the long run to preserve the legacy of the Saturn and of the Dreamcast. And so, it's a good thing when, you know, in the light of failing hardware and disk drives and the fact that, you know, the original hardware just isn't going to last forever. The more that we can access those games with modern hardware is going to be I think beneficial to everybody, and particularly when we now have new generations who we want to share those awesome experiences with and that enthusiasm with. I'm really looking forward to the prospect of more remasters. And in Panzer Dragoon Saga's case, I mean, I think it has to be a remake because the original source code's pretty much gone for the game. So that, you know, that somebody who would have to come in and be willing to dedicate the resources to build that game from the ground up.
When you're talking about preserving these games like that, I think at some point we are going to have to stop looking at these things as Saturn games, as Dreamcast games, as PlayStation games. We're going to have to take that out of there because, yes, where they started, you know, blah, blah, blah. But I think at a certain point, we're just going to have to appreciate them as games. I mean, we made fun of it the other day with the N64 Junkyard. But there is a lot of fanboyism in this community. Hell, I faked being fanboy up on the Junkyard one time just to see what would happen. And oh my God, people literally took me for being serious that, you know, I absolutely hated Nintendo. I don't hate Nintendo. I got a Super Nintendo. I just grew up with Sega, so I kind of like them a little bit better. I like the games a little bit better. Personal opinion on the matter. But I think that we're going to have to kind of separate ourselves from that and, you know, just get to the point to where it's like, hey, man, they're games. I mean, I can remember a couple of years back, everybody was going on and on and on about, man, why are you getting a PlayStation 4? The Xbox One's so much better. Why are you getting an Xbox One? The PlayStation 4's so much better. Dude, the reason I picked up a PlayStation 4 was because I like the DualShock controller better than I like the Xbox controller. That's literally the reason I got it. Literally the only reason I got it. Plus, I've had PlayStation consoles for the most part. I mean, I've got an Xbox, Xbox 360. I've got all the PlayStation consoles, but I just don't like the Xbox controller. I mean, at some point, and you know, 3DO tried to do this a long time ago. They did it from a market perspective whenever it came to the actual consoles. But they wanted everything to be on just one console. Everybody made games for one console. And I doubt that we're anywhere close to that. But I think it would do a real service to the community if we could take a look back at past games and, you know, not try to put them into boxes all the time. You know, not try to, because, I mean, you put them up in a box whenever they're RPGs. You put them in a box depending on what kind of RPG they are. You put them on a box depending on what system they are, what generation they are. We put stuff in so many different boxes, man. Hell, dude, it's an RPG. Why can't we just appreciate things like that? Yeah. You know, and I think that kind of plays into the toxicity of the community, is everybody's trying to segment stuff out whenever the truth is we're just here to play games. And however you want to play them is great. And I think that has to be brought into the forefront whenever we're talking about remastering and remaking old games, is that, no, it's not going to be for everybody. But I don't really think Shenmue 3 is being made for everybody, nor would a Panzer Dragoon Saga being made for everybody. Yeah, there's a economic point of it to where you want to make money back from it, but I really doubt Sega, Yu Suzuki, or anybody who's making Shenmue 3 in this instance is really expecting this to sell, you know, 5 million copies. I mean, I'm not trying to be negative by any means, but let's just look at the sales figures on the first two games.
Yeah, and also, I mean, I feel like from a market perspective, though, the challenge that we run into in the console space, well, video games in particular, is that the idea behind having multiple platform holders is that they are competing. And when you have, you know, Xbox and PS4 and whatever Nintendo or the Switch, when you have each of those consoles that are catering and trying to essentially win over each other's pool of customers to an extent, that forces them to innovate in ways that their competition isn't doing. And so, and that is inherently going to create an environment where you do have a us versus them mentality when the PlayStation touts its exclusives that you can't get on Xbox, or the Xbox comes out with all of the backwards compatibility. It's like, look at how all this extra value we're adding for our customers who, you know, we're not even charging for, or the Switch, you know, where everything is portable, just as portable as it is playable on your home entertainment, whatever your setup is, and plus all the Nintendo exclusives. And so, I think it's hard to separate that competitive aspect between that's embedded in the way that the market works from fans of those particular consoles to begin with. So that's kind of a challenge, I think, and it always has been.
You know, you say that, but I mean, honestly, if we take the console market out of the equation and we look at PC gaming, literally, it's a completely different dynamic. Everybody's playing the same games. We're talking about PC here. We're not talking about the difference between Mac and everything else, or Linux, or right. You know, but just strictly PC. People who play PC games are all on the same thing. Granted, most people use Steam now, but the fact remains you can still get these games outside of Steam for the most part. You know, a lot of them you can. But you still have competition. You still have innovation. You have a lot more innovation on the PC than you do on consoles. I mean, just go up on Steam and start looking for games. I don't really take credit with the whole. I'm not trying to put your what you're saying down, but I don't put a lot of credence to the idea that different console manufacturers lead to innovation. In a lot of ways, I think it does a disservice to the community whenever you have. Now, the Switch is a whole different thing. The Switch is a handheld that is also a home dock. It's a whole different animal. I'm not talking about it. I'm talking specifically about Xbox and PlayStation. There is practically no difference in what they're doing. And if truth be told, PlayStation is annihilating Xbox right now. Console exclusives, they got it. And that's what I'm talking about. Whenever you have those console exclusives, the only way for somebody to play those games is to be on the PlayStation. Does that mean I want Xbox to stop doing their own thing? That's not really what I'm saying. That's why I'm not really putting it into the dynamic of current-gen consoles. I'm simply talking about looking back. I mean, think about how many people have RetroPies. Think of the availability of retro gaming on PC. Think about all these different options. I mean, Super Guns. You can buy a Super Gun and play multiple arcade games, or you can download an emulator. I mean, basically what I'm alluding to is, looking back, I think a lot of us are going to have to stop trying to put everything into a box, because sometimes the best thing to do for something is to not put it in a box to begin with. Because whenever you do that, you're separating itself from everything else. And come on, y'all. I mean, be honest. Just be completely honest about the issue. How many games do you know that are considered absolute amazing games on one console that, honestly, a lot of people don't like? And if we were just to talk about them as a general game instead of the game on that console, they wouldn't get half the credence they get.
Well, I mean, we've been talking about Shenmue for a half hour. So
exactly. Yeah.
I mean, I think I was talking a little less, speaking a little less in terms of absolute innovation, and more about the fact that when you have companies competing and doing their own things and creating their own value that's exclusive to their platform,
right,
that's going to inherently fragment the market. And even in the PC space, anytime you do see, and I'll use that word, innovations come up, that is in itself its own form of gatekeeping that is going to separate a haves and have nots. I mean, people who have the highest end processor or the highest end rigs are going to have very different experiences and maybe look differently upon those who are more casual, or maybe those who have VR are in a completely different, you know, there's all these ways to fragment the market, even if it's all just one big open platform.
Oh yeah.
That I don't think you're really going to be able to get away from. Sorry, Simon.
I was going to say, I agree with Sam though, that the games need to be treated as games and we need to step away from the consoles. I just wanted to say, one of the things I loved about the Wii was the marketplace where you could buy Sega and Nintendo games, and it kind of opened up a lot of what had been going on in Nintendo that I didn't know about. But I got some great games for that were brought out on the Mega Drive, the Master System, on the Wii Marketplace. I also got some great games from the SNES, from the N64. As Sam said, to be able to just remember these now as games. I mean, you remember what record label, I guess, certain people like Elvis, I know he came out on Sun, but that doesn't really make him, you know, it doesn't make any difference to enjoyment of his music to know which label produced him. All it means is that, you know, you associate it slightly with that record label. The same with games. If we get stuck in one, only liking one genre or one company's wares, we just stop ourselves from having those experiences. So it's stupid to be tribalistic about your gaming.
Well, I mean, it's not just gaming, right? It's politics. It's the way we pretty much approach everything.
it is human nature to a degree. I mean, at its base root, we want to associate with things that are similar to us, and things that are not similar to us, we generally want to keep a distance to us. That's just human nature. It's survival instinct from back whenever we were running across the fields of Africa and the mountains of Europe and et cetera, et cetera. I don't think you're ever going to breed that out of us, but, you know, I think that, you know, where we are as a culture and where we are as a people today, we have the ability to, you know, take a step back and just, you know, stop being so stupid about crap.
Well said. Well said.
We're going caveman status.
To Simon's point, the way I would approach games is exactly that way. It's like, it doesn't really do me any good to block off the experiences that I could possibly be open to enjoying just because they are on another console or from a company that I have inherent biases towards for whatever reason. One of the issues I think that complicates that is that I also don't have infinite money, so I can't own every console or own every, you know, or own the highest, the best PC to play every game. So you are kind of balanced, restricted to making these trade-offs between what you have accessible to you and trying to be open about things. But yeah, I mean, certainly mentality wise, the more we can get these games, and maybe Sega Forever will help with this, you know, just expand the pool of all of those experiences to transcend the platforms that they were originally built for, is going to just benefit everybody to be able to bring new people into enjoying those games, regardless of whatever platform of choice they they have at their disposal.
So, yeah, I guess we're going to go ahead and wrap it up. I hope y'all all enjoyed the ramblings of the Saturn Junkyard. Sometimes we kind of just like to go up into tirades, and this happens a lot before the episodes and after the episodes. But, you know, sometimes we figure we just want to share the love and let y'all know what's going on inside our heads. But with all that being said and done, let's go ahead and throw in some plugs. Y'all already know the game. We've got plenty of people to talk about, so we're just going to run through them real fast. Dreamcast Junkyard, Sega Saturn Shiro, Mastercast TV. He gives us a lot of love. We're going to give it right back. On top of that, we also have Chris from Saturn Memories. Go check him out. Sega Lord X is back in the community. Give him some love. I've got my own channel. You can find me on Facebook at the Southern Sega Gentleman. And you can also find me on YouTube. I got a video now, so it'll actually show up. But, yeah, that kind of fits the general bit. If you like blogs, go read the blog, SaturnJunkyard.com. If you like Facebook groups, we've got one of them. If you like Facebook pages, we've got one of them. We've got everything. We really do. Twitter, Google Play, iPlay, iBuy, whatever kind of words they put together nowadays. It doesn't matter. It's a whole bunch of nonsense.
All just random syllables.
Just random syllables. Just throw out some sounds. You'll make something, I promise you. Other than that, though, this has been the Southern Sega Gentleman.
I have one more plug, or an additional plug to where you mentioned Mastercast and AJ. Kind of going back to the divide we were talking about earlier with the story-driven games and how that changed stuff, one of the most pivotal games, I think, in that transition was Metal Gear Solid. And he just dropped an incredible, or I guess last week he dropped a fantastic review of Metal Gear Solid. So please go check it out. It's awesome.
Yeah, go give him some love. He worked on that hard. He really did. But yeah, I think that's about it this time. Everybody good? For everybody here at the Saturn Junkyard, this has been Titancast. I'm the Southern Sega Gentleman, and this is us signing out.